From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last week, WikiLeaks posted on its website the trove of data stolen from Sony Pictures last fall. They justified it by saying it's a rare insight into the inner workings of a large, secretive, multinational corporation. Some online publications have dipped into the website themselves and published people's personal information. Amazon purchases, medical information, credit card numbers. They say it is fair game, but others object, calling it a greater threat to people's privacy than Edward Snowden's NSA leaks. This hour on Point, WikiLeaks, the Internet, and a whole new world for privacy. You can join us on air or online. Have you been on the WikiLeaks site? Have you read the emails? Do you think it's fair game or not? Join us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me from New York now is Michael Cohen. His recent op-ed in the Boston Globe is "Where's the WikiLeaks outrage? The site has done far more damage to privacy than the NSA." You can read an excerpt on our website, onpointradio.org. Michael, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So this week, WikiLeaks posted all of this information on its website, the entire archive of data and information stolen from Sony Pictures last fall. Tell us exactly what happened.
Well, of course, you know, this process began in the last fall when Sony was hacked, allegedly by the North Korean government, and bits and pieces of the information from their emails, documents that they private information of the, both executives and also corporate information was leaked out to various reporters over several weeks. And of course, you know, this led to a great deal of controversy for Sony. You had executives that were making, you know, racially insensitive jokes, one of whom, Amy Pascal, ended up losing her job over it. You had stories about gender inequality as far as pay salaries for actresses and actors from the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that, there was a whole lot of information that really wasn't in the public interest, private information of various Sony executives and Sony employees that was ended up being pushed out there. And the story sort of died down for a few months. But then last week, WikiLeaks decided to publish the entire trove of data that they had from Sony, and did so on a database that is easily searchable. So now you can go onto the WikiLeaks site and you can find credit card information, medical information, all kinds of personal information. I spent about 20, 30 minutes on the site, was able to find a lot of this information as well as other things that I think people wouldn't want to be available in a searchable database.
Like what?
People's medical information, like a credit card number, like somebody talking about being fired from their job, just generally, you know, private email communications between people that – where there's a certain expectation, for good reason, that this is private. This is just between two people or people who were on the email list. Communication that our expectation is not going to be put out onto the web and sort of mocked and ridiculed. And of course, places like Gawker and Jezebel websites ended up sort of trafficking in a lot of this information. And you had one story in Jezebel, for example, about Amy Pascal, this executive who was pushed out of Sony, talking about her purchases on Amazon, feminine products that she had purchased, and mocking her over that. And this, to me, seems to cross the line between sort of public interest journalism, if you will, and just gossip, just a ridicule and humiliation of individuals for no other reason than, I think, to get traffic to the website.
Well, is that the motivation, to get traffic, to get eyeballs to the site?
I mean, you know, you'll have to ask them what their motivation is. I can't imagine what the other motivation would be, unless it's just to publicly humiliate people. I can't see any public benefit in putting out someone's Amazon purchases and using this as a tool for making fun of them.
Let me play some sound here. Michael Cohen from a TED conference in 2010. TED's Chris Anderson asking WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange if there is a risk of unintended consequences because of leaked information. Here is his response.
We have a harm minimization policy. We have a way of dealing with information that has sort of personally identifying information in it. But there are legitimate secrets. You know, your records with your doctor, that's a legitimate secret. But we deal with whistleblowers that are coming forward that are really sort of well motivated.
So there he is in 2010, Julian Assange, WikiLeaks founder. And now this last week, making a turnaround, medical records, credit card numbers, private email addresses, salary data. I mean, what's changed in the last 5 years?
You'd have to ask him. I mean, I look at this and I can't see any evidence that that WikiLeaks redacted information that was private. I can't see any evidence that they were discriminating in the kind of stuff they put out there. If you go through the archive, it appears to be just a data dump, basically, without any sort of discretion exercised in how this material was put out there.
Let me bring in John Cook now. He's executive editor of investigations at Gawker Media. John, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Nice to have you with us. Give us your sense of what's going on here, why this information suddenly now has been posted on WikiLeaks and on your sites as well.
Well, what's important to remember here is that this was all on the internet since last fall. This was dumped en masse and available to anybody who wanted to find it. What WikiLeaks has done is simply render the data that was already there and on the computers of dozens of journalists and any other interested parties who wanted to go grab it. WikiLeaks rendered it in a searchable database online. So this is not publication of any new material. It's simply reformatting it in a way that makes it easier for people to find things that they're looking for. And I think at the end of the day, WikiLeaks will have to answer to the questions of whether they sufficiently discriminated between the kinds of information that they were formatting to make available searchable. At the end of the day, equalizing the access to information that's already out there on the internet, I think, is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. This is not a situation where WikiLeaks was taking information that was previously secret or private, that is post-hack secret or private, and putting it out there. This was all out there, floating around the internet on the computers of hundreds, thousands of people who were sifting through it.
I guess people would say equalizing access to information is a good thing, maybe when you're talking about public figures, but these are records from private citizens, right? Medical data, salary data, plenty else that most people wouldn't want available in a searchable database. And I'm curious.
First of all, again, you'd have to ask WikiLeaks about whether they made the right sort of discriminations in terms of what they put in that database. We at Gawker have reported on public figures who are very powerful people about whom there is a lot of interest, people who have traded on their reputations and sought out positions of power and accountability. The Boston Globe, which published Michael's op-ed, reported on that salary data. That salary data was very interesting because it showed gender and racial discrepancies in pay. The Boston Globe and other outlets saw that as newsworthy, as did we. So, there's a lot of information in there that is that people are very interested in and that informs how we look at these powerful institutions.
Michael
like
Cohen? Michael Cohen, would you respond?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think there are stories from this leak that are important. And I think one of them is this evidence that you have inequality in how actresses and actors are paid in Hollywood. But of course, the information on the WikiLeaks site is much broader than that. There is just basic salary data of employees, of actors who have been hired for movies. In other words, you can't just discriminate and say, well, there's a good story here about gender equality when you're putting out all of this data on people's salary history. I think John's right, obviously, that these stories, there is some public interest in these stories. But the thing is that Gawker has basically been saying to their readers, go out and look in this database. Go find things that we can put on our site. And my argument would be that some of the stuff that's being put out there is stuff that really just is not in the public interest and stuff that's meant to embarrass people and humiliate people. And someone like Amy Pascal, who already has lost her job, who is no longer a public figure because she's no longer at Sony, putting out so much information about her personally, I don't see what the point of that is. It just seems at this point to be sort of humiliating her and ridiculing her after she's already been pretty much humiliated, ridiculed, and lost her job.
And so, John Cook, what is the value in putting all of this information out and for you at Gawker Media to pick up a lot of it and put it online as well?
Well, so, I can speak to Gawker's role in terms of – and Jezebel's role in terms of what stories we've decided to report on from that from that hack, both before and after WikiLeaks, formatted in a searchable database, because we were reporting on it back in the fall as well. Amy Pascal remains a public figure and remains a figure of interest. There was no intent to humiliate or ridicule her. One of our sort of founding principles is at the company is that often the best story is not in the paper. It's the story that the reporters are talking about at the bar after the paper goes to press. There are conversations that are happening among journalists, among, elites in Hollywood who are looking at this stuff and passing it around and talking about it. And that's what we want. Those are conversations that we want to expose to our readers. People were talking about Amy Pascal's Amazon purchases. Those links were getting passed around in private. And they were a fact. They were out there on the internet. They existed for anybody with an internet connection to look at. And we did a story that talked about that. Now, if Michael's willing to concede that the salary information that was released in that hack is newsworthy, from Sony's corporate perspective, that information is just as private as Amy Pascal's Amazon purchases. All of this was criminally, criminally hacked, and every. Every bit of data in that hack, everyone who generated that data had an expectation of privacy. But what happened is, criminals broke into it and put it out on the internet. And once that happens, that's a news event. There's news in there. It's out there. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. And, I'm willing to admit there's some tough sort of lines that you have to discriminate against, but or in between. But at the end of the day, this is news. People are talking about it. People are interested.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about thousands of emails hacked from Sony Pictures, more than just business, released online personal information for anyone to see, happening just this last week. Here's some sound from Seth Rogen and James Franco appearing on Howard Stern a few months ago to discuss their movie The Interview. Supposed to have instigated the damaging Sony hacks in the first place, Stern insisted that the president and the media should have rallied around Sony, and Rogen agreed that the country has played right into the attackers' hands.
All of this information would literally just be sitting on some obscure corner of the internet.
That's right.
If it wasn't for these news articles.
We're talking with Michael Cohen, author of the Boston Globe op-ed, Where's the WikiLeaks Outrage? And from New York, John Cook, executive editor of Investigations at Gawker Media. Michael Cohen, how do data dumps like this one threaten our shrinking zone of privacy in this country?
Well, I mean, look, if you're a Sony employee, you've had your privacy violated in a sort of an egregious manner here, I would say. I mean, I think one of the things that's forgotten about this story is that the victim in this story is Sony. This hack has cost them, millions upon millions of dollars. It has exposed their trade secrets, their corporate information, and it has put their employees in a position where their personal information is now online for anybody to be able to search it. And so I think when this kind of behavior is considered acceptable, when news organizations profit off of this kind of behavior, I think it provides encouragement, it seems to me, to other cyber extortionists to do the same thing. I mean, it's also, I think, forgotten here, too, that as far as the federal government has argued, this hack was done by the North Korean government in order to suppress free speech, to suppress Sony from putting out a movie that was seen as disrespectful to North Korea's leaders. In a sense, what's happening here is they're being rewarded. I mean, the irony of this is WikiLeaks established itself in part to keep governments accountable for their actions. How are they holding North Korea accountable for their actions here? They're actually assisting North Korea's efforts in trying to threaten Sony. And I think, to be honest, I think they're actually encouraging other organizations, other hackers, to do the same thing that the people who hacked Sony did. So I think, once this stuff becomes acceptable, becomes routinized, you're just going to see more and more of it and more people's privacy being violated and not being taken so seriously because, we think this is news. I mean, I think frankly, John mentioned earlier that that salary information is private information. And he's right, of course. But news organizations have to balance privacy versus public interest. And I think in the case of those stories, there was a public interest in knowing that Hollywood studios have different pay rates for women and for men. I can't see what the public interest is in exposing, you know, what feminine products Amy Pascal bought on Amazon. To me, that the fact that reporters are talking about it doesn't make it news. It just makes it gossip.
So, Michael Cohen, to quote your headline from the Boston Globe piece, where's the outrage? Why aren't we hearing more about this? Can you speak to that?
Well, I think part of it's because Sony is a big multinational corporation, and I think, you know, people involved, Jeremy Pascal and executives, are very wealthy, and so I think somehow it's a different standard. The woman who wrote the article in Jezebel about the Amazon purchases of Amy Pascal, when pushed on why she published this, said, sort of joked about the fact that these executives are super rich. Why should we feel sorry for them? The fact that they're super rich doesn't mean that they lose their privacy rights. I mean, I may disagree with somebody politically or ideologically. I still think they have a right to keep their emails private.
And, you know, Sony has those same privacy rights. I mean, you just made an argument that anybody who's reporting on these leaks is playing into the hands of North Korea and encouraging future hackers to do the same thing. And then in the next breath said, yeah, but some of it's newsworthy. I mean, either it's legitimate to play into the hands, as you put it, of these North Korean hackers, or it's not. I mean, your argument would forbid the Boston Globe from reporting on that newsworthy information, because even reporting on that would encourage the hacks and play into the hands of North Korean hackers. I mean, the news organizations that are reporting on these on this information, which includes the Boston Globe, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all manner of outlets, are not condoning the behavior of whoever hacked into these servers, and it's not established that it was North Korea. They're simply reporting on information that has been released on the internet that has news value that people are interested in.
But John Cook, WikiLeaks,
Gawker
let me
been
just
the
interrupt.
Victim of a hacking attack. I don't, you know, yeah. and had our private information and the private information of some of our users released on the internet. I don't condone that behavior, but once it's out there. To sit there and pretend that it's not available to anybody with an internet connection is just simply because of the way it was released is foolhardy.
I guess the issue, John, is WikiLeaks always presented itself as serving a higher calling. They were exposing truth and protecting people from the government. Do you think, to your mind, does the release of this kind of information cheapen their brand? And what does it do to your brand at Gawker?
I mean, Julian Assange has cheapened the brand of WikiLeaks beyond repair. I'm not here to defend WikiLeaks. I think WikiLeaks I think Julian Assange had a really good idea that sort of crashed against the shores of his ego. I don't defend them. In terms of Gawker's brand, I'm not concerned with their brand. I'm concerned with the stories that we do, and we do stories that a lot of other people won't do. And we do stories that hopefully tell the story behind the story, as it were, and that's what our attempt to that's what we've been trying to do in our Sony coverage. I mean, Michael, brushed off what did we learn from this stuff? Well, some rich guy tried to get his kid an internship at BuzzFeed, which is a reference to a story that Sam Biddle, one of our reporters at Gawker, did about Michael Linton's, who's the CEO of Sony, successful attempt to buy his daughter a admission to Brown University. And that's a very newsworthy story, and it's certainly of interest to all of the people who didn't get into Brown University because their parents weren't multimillionaires who made significant donations to the endowment of the universities that they were applying to.
I've got callers lined up around the block here, John. Let me get a few in here. Pete is in Toronto, Canada. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm not a big fan of WikiLeaks anymore, and I'll explain why. A while back, I applied for a job at an American company named Stratfor, and I was a bit surprised to find out a bit later, when the first sort of hack took place, that my name appeared on these WikiLeaks revelations. And it did me some reputational damage, and it's a kind of situation where you don't have any recourse. You really have to accept it, and as your guests say, once the genie's out of the bottle, there's not much you can do. That's all I wanted to say.
Pete, thank you. What do you say to that, John? Here's Pete. He had it happen to him. He's got no recourse, and it did some damage.
I mean, there's all manner of stories that people do that the subjects of those stories wish they weren't done. You know, I, again, as someone who has been the victim of one of these hacks at Gawker, and you know, we had some of our internal communications hacked and leaked on the internet. I understand the frustration. The Strat4, the information contained in the Strat4 hack was very newsworthy. There were a lot of good stories in there, things that people should know. The important thing is, you know, Gawker never published that caller's name. You know, the news, I don't know that any news organization did. Once the information is out, and this has been litigated to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled in a 2001 decision called Bartnicki that news organizations shouldn't be held liable for publishing information that was criminally obtained as long as they played no role in the obtaining of that information. You can't sit there and shut your eyes and pretend it doesn't exist.
Let's bring a legal voice in. Yeah, actually, go ahead, Michael, and then I'll bring in.
Yeah, I want to just say one thing. I mean, yeah. I want to be clear on this point. I don't question the right of Gawker to publish information. And John is right. News organizations publish information that is obtained illegally, classified material that's leaked to them all the time. My point really is more that journalists have to use some discretion what they choose to publish and not to publish. Publishing a story about gender inequality in Hollywood is one thing. Publishing a story about people's private details of private communication is something else. And my issue, really, to be very frank about it, is the discretion being utilized by sites like Gawker and Jezebel and how they put this information out there. Because I think what's happening is it's gone from there's a public interest story here to, hey, this is kind of fun gossip that we can make fun of people about. And I think on the Amy Pascal story in particular, I can see no value in that story other than to ridicule and humiliate Amy Pascal. And if that's where this is going, then again, I mean, this is the kind of thing I think that would encourage more of this, because you're going to see, basically, organizations are going to face much greater challenges than just having some of their trade secrets out there. They're going to have to deal with personal private information that is embarrassing to individuals, embarrassing to the company as a whole, being put on the internet. And I think, you know, news organizations like Gawker and others should just, I think, need to use a lot more discretion in what they choose to publish and not publish. And I think when you're putting stuff out there, it's basically gossip. It's not serving the public interest at all.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Washington. Paul Rosenzweig. He's a lecturer at George Washington University Law School. He's senior editor of the Journal of National Security Law and Policy. Paul, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We need your legal help here. We live in a surveillance age, big data, police cameras, drones, technology. It's changing the way we think about privacy. Things are changing so quickly. Where does the law stand on this?
Well, having listened to the story so far, I think I'd make three quick points about the law. The first is that changing the nature of the database from an unsearchable one to a searchable one is legally significant. The Supreme Court recognized back in 1989 a doctrine of what it called practical obscurity, which means it's available, but in practice it's really, really hard to get. And it said that was, in fact, an aspect of protecting privacy. So when WikiLeaks transforms a large unsearchable data dump into a searchable one, that makes a legal difference. The second is that public figures don't lose all of their privacy rights. They lose privacy with respect to matters of public interest, and that's a very difficult thing to define. Mm-hmm. But it does not – simply because I am a public figure, because I am speaking on this show, doesn't mean that I have no privacy interest in the value of my mortgage or what I purchase on Amazon. And in that context, your guests have been really circumspect in describing what it is that happened to Ms. Pascal. I'm kind of looking at it right now, and the headline is, "This is amazing Amy Pascal's cheap, crotch-intensive beauty regime." And the first item on the list is a hair dye that isn't for head hair, but rather for hair elsewhere on her body. And so that kind of begs the question or raises the question, the interesting legal question about whether or not that sort of purchase is a matter of public interest. And I think Ms. Pascal would – I mean, she probably won't bother to do it, but she'd have a decent legal argument that this crossed that line. Mm-hmm. And then the third point, of course, is the one that John has been emphasizing, which is that in the WikiLeaks data, and this is not on Jezebel, so it doesn't apply to their site, there's lots of information about private individuals who've never been public figures at all. Amy Pascal's secretary and the janitor, for that matter, at Sony. And right. They all have privacy rights that have been violated. It's a tort. It's called the public disclosure of private information. And they can't really get any money out of WikiLeaks, which is unfortunate. It's beyond remedy. But they have suffered what the law would see as a real injury.
Greg is calling from Spokane, Washington. Greg, you're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. The practical obscurity was a great term. I hadn't heard that one, but I was going to point that out. But the other thing is, this may not be as severe, but it brings up the question of tainted information, tainted data. The argument that it's out there, even though it was criminally inspired or obtained, that means we should be able to use it and publish it as we wish. By that argument, every bit of data created by or obtained by Mengele during his horrific experiments is perfectly justifiable to use in any experiment or research we want to do.
So the point is tainted information isn't relevant. Greg, thank you very much from Spokane. Here's Lisa in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to On Point.
Hi.
Hi.
Listen, the legal term is without malice, and as he said, that since they did not intend to put Lisa did this on into, you know, out there and fling mug at me, they have the term without malice. So they no one has any recourse on it because if they did not legally intend to harm me by what is it called? By making libelous claims against me.
Lisa, thank you. Paul Rosenzweig, jump in here. Without malice,
sure.
How do you determine
that? Well, first off, we should cabin that. That's a protection for the press for what they publish about public figures. With respect to matters of public interest. So that's a doctrine that says that if the New York Times publishes an article that says that Mitt Romney didn't pay his taxes, and it turns out that that's untrue, that in fact he did pay his taxes, they are nonetheless not liable for the error because they made the publication without malice. They conducted an investigation and they simply got it wrong. It's a way of protecting free speech and encouraging public debate about public figures. You gotta meet both those tests, though. It has to be about a public figure and it has to be about a matter of public interest. You know, it would be for, you know, some judge or jury to decide in a particular case whether or not a particular disclosure about a particular individual was on a matter of public interest and whether or not the news organization that published it did so after sufficient investigation.
I see. John Cook, after listening to our legal voice here, do you feel justified with the release of some of the information that you have, or do you worry about the stories that you've done from a legal perspective?
I have no worries from a legal perspective. And look, in terms of – I mean, Michael made a sort of plea for public interest journalism. Well, what public interest journalism is surrendering to people like Michael Cohen or other sort of grandees and judges of what we do to determine whether what we do is appropriate or not. I mean, I don't surrender that to somebody else. We make judgments about what's newsworthy. What are important stories and what are good stories and what are funny stories and what are good gossip stories, and we publish them. I'm perfectly confident in our legal footing, and I'm perfectly confident in our journalistic footing that these stories are out there. People are talking about them. And to sit there and pretend they don't exist based on a sort of overdeveloped sense of propriety is not the kind of journalism that I want to practice.
We're discussing private information being released online. What rights do we have as private citizens, as public officials? Should privacy be a right akin to freedom of speech? I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about WikiLeaks and other publishing companies hacking information from Sony Pictures and the threat we all face in the new world of cybersecurity. We're speaking with Michael Cohen, author of the Boston Globe op-ed piece, Where is the WikiLeaks Outrage? John Cook, executive editor of investigations at Gawker. Paul Rosenzweig, George Washington University Law School. Let's get Jeffrey in here from Ithaca, New York. Jeffrey, welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
My question is for John Cook. In the kind of selective rationale that was applied to the Amy Pascal case versus the series of arch moralistic tirades in Jezebel and Gawker with respect to the revenge porn and the leaking of celebrity private celebrity photos. It seems to me that Amy Pascal's, personal purchase history, would qualify in the same way for the kind of outrage that the leaks of celebrity photos did. They're both public figures, and so I wanted to find out.
I would say there are two answers to that. It's a good question. One is that there's not an editorial line at these at Gawker or at Jezebel. There are people of differing opinions when it came to Jezebel and Gawker, two sites that are part of Gawker Media, treated the photos that were leaked differently. But then the other thing I would say is that it's a very different thing, I think, to publish images of someone versus publishing emails that they got.
Here's some sound from December. Writer Aaron Sorkin appearing on the Today Show on NBC, harshly criticizing media outlets, picking up stories from the Sony documents released by the hacker group Guardians of Peace. He said that publishing information is worse by magnitudes, his words, than the recent celebrity nude photo leak, and emphasized that Sony is a huge company, not a mom-and-pop organization.
The thing we should be taking seriously, first and foremost, is privacy and dignity and the fact that once again, hackers who have threatened violence because the studio just wants to exercise the same First Amendment right that everybody else does, studio just wants to release a movie, have stolen this material, and now the press is selling it out of the back of a truck.
Michael Cohen, speak to this selective rationale piece and the difference between personal information and public necessity.
Well, look, I just want to point out here, I mean, earlier John said that he doesn't want people like me saying what should and should not be public interest. But again, I mean, as the caller mentioned, Gawker last year, or perhaps it was Jezebel, went to great lengths to say how wrong it was to publish nude pictures of celebrities. They took the exact position that I'm taking right now that John is criticizing. And saying what should and should not be in the public interest. And I think this line of saying, well, nude pictures are wrong, but Amazon purchases are appropriate. I mean, I don't know how one can draw that line, because clearly, you know, personally, I would prefer, I'm not sure.
You're
if
drawing
I,
that line, Michael. You're saying salary information is appropriate, but Amazon purchases aren't appropriate.
No, I'm not, John.
You're drawing
I'm saying salary is appropriate.
You're drawing lines,
if
you just draw them in a different place.
No, John,
you're saying it's
I'm
okay
saying
to report
salary
on hacked
information is appropriate.
That is private, but not other hacked information that is private.
What I am saying,
go ahead, Michael. Michael Cohen, go ahead.
What I'm saying is that information is, if you can make a clear argument for it in the public interest, then I think it's acceptable to publish it. Those are choices journalists make all the time. But you're making a distinction between nude pictures and Amazon purchases as if there is some bright line between these two things. And I think for a lot of people, they would say, I don't want my Amazon purchases being put online. I don't want my email communication being online. I'd rather have that go online I'd rather not have that go online than nude pictures.
So, John Cook, is there anything you wouldn't put out there? Is anything off limits? That's the question.
There are hundreds of things that we don't put out there every day, Jane. But no one who's the subject of a critical story wants it put out there. Rob Ford didn't want it published that he smokes crack. Manti Te'o didn't want it published that he invented a fake girlfriend. You know, any subject of any story is not going to want what they regard as private information put out there. I'm willing to accept, and I certainly do concede, that there are people can have different different lines and make different judgments, and it's not a fine, bright line. The argument that Michael is making is that it is inappropriate to play into the hands of these criminal hackers and violate the privacy rights of these individuals. And you know, by that argument, the privacy rights of Sony were violated. By that
argument,
every
story
violates those privacy rights.
Yes, please.
Can I just jump in on that one?
I mean, that's a couple of times. It is a matter of law that corporations don't have the same privacy interests as individuals. And in fact, in the public disclosure law area, corporations have long been held not to have any privacy interest against the public disclosure of truthful
there
facts about
them. There are confidentiality agreements.
They don't have privacy rights in the same way that we're talking about. So they do have, and those confidentiality agreements don't run to you. The legal doctrine of privacy rights against public disclosure are intended to bind the publication of these things, that is, to bind people like Gawker. Sony's confidentiality agreements with their actors and actresses bind each other not to disclose deliberately what they know about each other. So they don't involve you.
Let's get a call in here from Noel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Noel, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm an IT professional, so I have a slightly different perspective on all this.
Okay.
I think that people have to understand there is no privacy once your computer is connected to the internet. And the fact is that Sony's IT department fell asleep at the wheel. They made it easy for the hackers to get in there. If people aren't going to use encryption, if they're not going to take the steps themselves to protect their own information, it's out there. It's easy to grab.
Noel, thank you. Paul Rosenzweig, George Washington University Law School. Is that the real lesson here? There is no privacy left online anymore. You travel around cyberspace, you leave an indelible record, done.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of truth to that. Sony does have some answers to give to the people who worked for it and the people whose information it held. It was exceedingly poor in what it did, apparently, and as I understand the details of this, it was pretty close to the line of negligent, if not beyond it. That is especially true for the average citizen who kind of wanders around the network and doesn't take very many steps to protect their own privacy, their own anonymity. I will say that, you know, one odd aspect of this is that Ms. Pascal's Amazon purchases are widely known to Amazon. And that one of the things that I would say on the other side of this is that Amazon could have sold the information about her interest in these products to marketers for a fee, and she'd have had no complaint at all. So there is a little bit of dissonance in this as well.
Michael Cohen, jump in here. Your thoughts. Michael Cohen, are you there? All right. We'll try to get him back. Montague is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the program, Montague. Hello.
Hey. Yeah, I was just wondering, it seems like if all this information is owned by Sony and it's their property and it's obtained illegally and then distributed, how is that any different from, say, movies that are owned by Sony and then illegally obtained and then shared amongst other people? Seems like then it's just open source and it's available to all without any sort of punishment.
Montague, thank you. Paul Rosenzweig, your response.
Well, that's a great question. We've been discussing that as a matter of law for a long time. There are a lot of people, including Sony and the Motion Picture Association of America, who think that the pirated services offered by places like Pirate Bay, where they take movies and offer them for download, are in fact criminal, and they've been pressing Congress to take steps to restrict that flow of what they view as their copyrighted information. So they as well would see that as a violation of their rights, even if it's collected not by theft but by somebody making a surreptitious video in a movie theater.
Montague, thank you for the call. Michael Cohen, I believe you're back, columnist at the Boston Globe. I wanted to ask you about one of our callers, Noel, who said, you know, there is no privacy online anymore. You're in cyberspace. You're on email. You shop. You do whatever. You leave a mark. You have an indelible record online. And that's basically the end of it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I think we have much less privacy. And in many ways, we actually give up our privacy willingly by putting information out online. But to me, that actually would increase the need for greater discretion in how we think about privacy rights. You know, the fact that so much of our information can be accessed digitally, to me, it seems that should put a burden on journalists, put a burden on media organizations in general to operate, use as much discretion as possible in what they choose to publish and not publish, and how much that they are contributing to these violations of people's privacy rights. And again, I go back to what I said earlier. I mean, I think John is right that you know, in the sense that I'm not disagreeing with his right to publish it, and I think how we define public interest is in the eye of the beholder. You know, in my eye, what they've done, what Gawker's done, has push the boundaries of what should be private and not private, and they put information out there that I think has no public interest and is intended to harm people, maybe not intentionally, but I think that's the effect. And I think that they need to take into account when they publish this information, what's the larger implications of what they're doing? What are the larger implications on the individuals who are being exposed, on the hack that's profiting from this, and the privacy rights that are being violated? And to my mind, that those questions have not been asked on the Sony leak. And I think instead we've just sort of seen this as sort of titillation.
I'm curious, Michael, if
John Cook, go ahead.
Your claim was that in your op-ed was that the WikiLeaks has done more damage to privacy than the National Security Agency and its warrantless bulk collection of basically everything on the internet. Where do you not which is to me an absurd claim to compare systematic illegal collection by our government against whom we have Fourth Amendment rights against illegal, unreasonable search and seizure, to compare that to the publication of a one-off hack of corporate data. I mean, do you ask the same discretion of the NSA in terms of what they collect that you would ask of reporters?
Michael Cohen?
Of course I do. I mean, that goes without saying. Of course I do. And I absolutely believe that the Sony hack is much worse than what the NSA leak revealed, primarily because the NSA leak revealed that the government is collecting bulk data. What it doesn't show is that information is then being used against people or being leaked out into the public for everyone to go look at. I mean, if the NSA put that information on a searchable database, I'd say, yeah, that's as bad as what WikiLeaks did. But they didn't. WikiLeaks did take personal private information that shouldn't be in the public domain and put it out on a searchable database. To me, just from a tangible standpoint, I can point to specific individuals at Sony whose privacy rights have been violated. It is much more difficult to point to specific individuals who have had their privacy rights violated by what the NSA has done, even if you disagree with the bulk collection that they're doing. So I think that's the tangible difference here that we're talking about.
Mike's in Springfield, Illinois. Hi, Mike. Thank you for waiting and welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Yes.
It's a very interesting conversation. I wanted to bring in a wrinkle here that hasn't really been addressed yet, and that is the fact that this discussion has been revolving around personal privacy rights with respect to the United States. And, you know, here in the United States, we don't really have a right to privacy that's written in a document. It's something that's been cobbled together by the courts using the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and by extension, the 14th Amendment. But beyond that, with respect to this Sony leak, some of these people who are employees of Sony Pictures may be European Union citizens. And the European Union has written into its constitution a personal privacy right that explicitly mentions electronic communications as being a protected class of information for personal privacy for European citizens. So if I were the editor of Jezebel or Gawker, and I've written a story that's about embarrassing personal information about a European Union citizen that's available through their website to European Union citizens, they would have a constitutional tort to be able to sue for invasion of personal privacy. So, you know, since this information is on the internet and it's accessible globally, just talking about what the personal privacy rights are in the United States
They're very different in Europe. I've got it, Mike. Thank you so much. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Paul Rosenzweig, jump in here. Europe has always been more strict about privacy issues. Isn't that correct? They think of privacy as a fundamental right.
It certainly is at a constitutional level. I actually think that the American tort privacy system is pretty robust. But the caller's point is absolutely correct that if Amy Pascal were a citizen of France and Gawker published this story in France, they'd have a lot less legal protection than they do here in the United States. Indeed, they might even be subject to another recent European invention, the right to be forgotten, in which they can compel people like Gawker to take down information off of the network. It is a very, very different construct.
And very dangerous to and inimical to a free press. And
yeah, I'm not sure I would defend. I would advocate for that as much as the lines we have either. But it is clearly a different line.
Michael Cohen, take us out here. We've just got about a minute and a half left. What's the lesson? You started all this with the Boston Globe op-ed piece. Where's the WikiLeaks outrage? What's the bottom line here for the average person? Not the Amy Pascals of the world, not the executives, not the public figures, but for those people who are online, doing what they do every day. What's the takeaway here?
I mean, I think, you know, the person who called earlier, I think, was right that when we go online and we send emails, I mean, the line is, you know, you never assume everything you put online is public. It's going to become public. And I think that's right. And I think, you know, I think all of us in some ways probably ignore that lesson when we put stuff online. But I think knowing this fact, knowing that so much of this information can become available, can get leaked, it just puts that much more burden, I think, on all of us to think about what the privacy implications are of putting out some of this information, and that even individuals like Amy Pascal at Sony or any employee at Sony share the same privacy rights that you and I expect to have. And I think, you know, if we don't want our information to be online, things like our Amazon purchases, I think we should extend the same sort of, you know, rights to other people as well.
Michael Cohen, author of the Boston Globe op-ed, Where's the WikiLeaks Outrage? Thanks for being with us today, Michael. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
John Cook, executive editor of Investigations at Gawker. Appreciate your time, John. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Paul Rosenzweig, lecturer at George Washington School of Law. Paul, thank you for the legal expertise. Good to
Thanks
have
for
you.
Having me.
Thank you. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow after the earthquake, we'll look at the rescue, the hard way ahead, and the geopolitics in Nepal. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.